at alaskaair.com.
Afternoon, it's a minute before 12 o'clock. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. Foggy, misty, rainy kind of day. 51 degrees out at the airport right now with 90% humidity, less than a mile of visibility. About the same here on Signal Hill. We're at 50. We can see the high school, but not much beyond that. Rain in the forecast today with a high near 53, east winds 20 miles an hour, chance of precipitation 100%. Pretty much stays that way tonight with more rain, could be heavy at times, low around 50, east winds 25 miles an hour with a 100% chance of precipitation. Between 3/4 of an inch of precipitation is probably going to come. More rain tomorrow with a high near 53, southeast winds 20 to 25, drops down to an 80% chance of rain tomorrow. Chiniac Bay, small craft advisory tonight and Wednesday. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. Marmot Bay this afternoon in Chiniac Bay. East 26-foot seas rain. East 25, 9-foot seas rain tonight. East 25, 7-foot seas rain on Wednesday. Marmot Bay, east 25, 10-foot seas this afternoon. Up to east 30, 12-foot seas rain tonight. And east 25, 9-foot seas rain tomorrow. 16th of June, what can you expect? Flowers coming up through the ground. Need some days like this. But he is staying safe and indoors. There's a lot of people out cutting grass today. We have news headlines from NPR coming up in a couple of seconds here. Local news and Talk of the Rock today. Jared will be in with another group of guests at 12:30. Stay tuned.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump facing backlash and falling poll numbers over his response to the civil unrest in recent weeks is formally calling for changes in policing nationwide. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports Trump was flanked by police as he signed an executive order during a ceremony in the Rose Garden today.
The president has been under increasing pressure to take action after the killing of George Floyd at the hands of police in Minneapolis.
Reducing crime and raising standards are not opposite goals. They are not mutually exclusive. They work together. They all work together.
The president said he met in private with families that have been affected by police shootings before signing the order that calls for raising use of force standards and creating a database of problem officers. Trump also demonstrated his clear support of law enforcement and criticized activists who used the slogan defund the police, describing their efforts to rethink how police are deployed as radical attempts to dissolve police departments. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
Atlanta police are facing even more public fury after one of their officers shot and killed Rayshard Brooks. In reviewing body cam video of his encounter with officers last week, the mayor and other officials say Brooks did not pose a lethal threat and should not have been gunned down. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who is chairing a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on policing changes today, weighed in.
The Atlanta thing is a bit more difficult. He had a pretty good interaction that went bad quickly. Shooting somebody should be like the last resort, because once you're dead, you're dead. You know, if the guy gets away, you can catch him again. But the idea of using lethal force has to be revisited.
Democratic Senator Cory Booker says Congress needs to act more boldly.
And doing the things that we actually know will hold police officers accountable for their conduct, which will set meaningful standards, will allow us as a federal government to enforce a law.
The full House votes this week on policing changes. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell told lawmakers today there's a reasonable probability that Americans will need more help from the federal government to weather the economic pain caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Here's NPR's Scott Horsley.
Powell says eventually he expects a full recovery from the COVID-19 recession, but for workers whose jobs revolve around large in-person gatherings, he warns it could be a long road back. The Fed chairman did not weigh in on whether Congress should extend the extra $600 a week in unemployment benefits that are set to expire next month, but he says,
I do think you'll want to continue support for workers in some form. I think there are going to be an awful lot of unemployed people for some time.
Powell says the trillions of dollars in aid Congress has already okayed is having a positive effect, as evidenced by a stronger than expected bounce back in retail sales last month. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
Good afternoon. The information received from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services about the COVID-19 case reported on Friday the 12th has been updated to identify the individual as a non-resident seafood worker. Individual is isolated, being monitored, and contact investigation is complete. If you're feeling sick or suspect you may be infected with the virus that caused COVID-19, remain at home, contact a healthcare professional, and take steps to prevent disease from spreading to people in your home and your community. If you're not sick, wash your hands, cover your cough, clean frequently touched surfaces, keep your circle small, social gatherings limited, wear a mask, face covering when out in public, and maintain social distancing from others when you're out in public. Two seafood workers have tested positive for COVID-19 in the Bristol Bay Borough. Both symptom individuals are asymptomatic. The Kamai Community Health Center announced Saturday that the individual had tested positive for COVID-19 as part of a processor's protection plan. On Sunday, it reported another non-resident processing worker had tested positive. That second case was identified during contact tracing for the initial case. Kamai Executive Director Mary Swain said in an update that they were part of a group that tested negative for COVID-19 in Seattle. They then chartered to Naknek and have been in quarantine since arriving in the borough. Both are currently in isolation. The other close contacts have tested negative and are now quarantining in separate locations. Alaska has notched some of its highest coronavirus numbers over the past week. The number of confirmed cases in one day recently hit a new high. So did the number of active cases in the state. And as Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon reports, the data has healthcare professionals worried that Alaskans are developing what they call coronavirus fatigue.
A graph of the number of new coronavirus cases among Alaskans each day between the end of March and now looks a little like the letter U. It starts high, with double-digit case counts soon after the state began tallying Alaska's infections. Then it drops and flattens out through mid-April and much of May, with just a few cases reported each day. But recently, the number of cases has climbed again.
It looks a lot like it did in March right now in terms of numbers and the steepness of the slope, so that's quite concerning.
That's Dr. Tom Hennessy, an infectious disease epidemiologist in Anchorage. Hennessy and a number of other healthcare professionals say they're worried some Alaskans are developing coronavirus fatigue, forgetting about the virus and becoming lax with social distancing and mask wearing. Alaska is among more than a dozen states that, since the start of June, have recorded their highest 7-day average of new coronavirus cases. Hennessy says if behavior doesn't change, the case counts may only get worse.
We're in the middle of a pandemic and people are dying and we run the risk of blowing up our healthcare system. And I just think we need more urgency in messaging and people taking it more seriously.
There's a number of factors contributing to the rise in cases. The state has reopened, hunker down orders have ended, there's more testing, and more people from out of state are coming to Alaska. Also, a few significant outbreaks have helped drive up numbers. A long-term care facility in Anchorage has more than 40 cases. The state reported a cluster of infections at a seafood plant in Whittier and another on the Tustamina State Ferry. Plus, Dr. Carrie Gardner, the chief medical officer at Alaska Regional Hospital, pointed to the recent holiday.
We're seeing an increase in positive number of cases consistent with what you would expect after Memorial Day weekend.
Gardner says there are some statistics she feels hopeful about. Alaska continues to have one of the lowest rates of infection per capita. The number of deaths and hospitalizations in the state has also stayed relatively low. There are hundreds of hospital beds and ventilators available.
So people should feel safe being here. That does not mean that people should give up on all the things that got us here. So we are not out of the woods with the virus.
In Anchorage, the director of the city's health department, Natasha Pineda, says how Alaskans are becoming infected is a concern. Back in March, infection was often linked to out-of-state travel. Now, it's more often from what epidemiologists call community spread.
And that's concerning because it means that the community, you know, the virus itself is present in the community, and no one's going to know where it's present because a lot of people maybe is asymptomatic carriers. So that's a concerning shift.
According to national data, the rate that Alaskans are transmitting the virus is among the highest in the country. While Pineda says she's also watching hospital capacity, she describes those numbers as more of a lagging indicator. They show how the sickest of the sick are utilizing the healthcare system. Where Pineda already sees stress on the system is the use of contact tracers. These are the teams of people tasked with finding the close contacts of those infected with the virus and monitoring them. Recently, Anchorage had to call in backup from the state and federal government to track all of the new cases. The Kenai Peninsula has also needed outside help.
That starts to be concerning if we, you know, if we exceed our capacity and then the state exceeds their capacity, we really, the strategy of using contact tracing, monitoring, and investigation and testing to maintain control over virus spread in the community goes away, that would be problematic.
Pineda echoed calls from other healthcare professionals that Alaskans need to practice good hygiene, keep their social circles small, and wear masks. At a recent news conference, Governor Mike Dunleavy said the rise in cases was expected as the state reopens. It doesn't appear he has any immediate plans to put any restrictions back in place.
No surprise, cases are going up. The more we open up and mix, it's just the way it is. And we're keeping an eye on our hospital beds, our ICU beds, our PPE, all the equipment we talked about. So far, nothing unusual is occurring.
Dunleavy says the state will start having a different conversation if intensive care unit beds fill up or if more and more clusters of cases appear. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
Canada and the U.S. have extended restrictions for crossing the border as of today. All non-essential travel between the countries will be prohibited until at least July 21st. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said the move is important to curb the spread of COVID-19.
This is an important decision that will keep people in both of our countries safe.
There are exceptions. Alaska residents in the lower 48 are allowed to transit Canada to return home. Workers in essential industries are also allowed to cross in both directions, nor do the restrictions apply to trade, but they do affect tourism and recreational travel, including shopping. Fewer than 100,000 Canadians have tested positive for COVID-19. More than 8,000 have died. More than 2 million Americans have tested positive, with 118,000 plus have died. This is the third time the border restrictions have been extended since March. Maps of Kodiak may be getting an upgrade this year. The Kodiak Island Borough is considering a multi-year contract with an aerial imaging company that promises to deliver enhanced 3D images of the entire Kodiak area. Jared Griffin from KMXD News explains what this new mapping imagery is and what it means for Kodiak.
The tool is a digital mapping process called orthoimagery. An orthoimage is a composite picture of aerial photographs with the geometric qualities of a map. It's like a digital mosaic created from several photographs and mathematical equations that adjust the pictures for geographical and structural features such as terrain and elevation. The borough has been using aerial imagery for over 10 years. Currently, though, the borough's mapping capabilities only offer eagle-eye views. That is, the maps only provide pictures of the tops of land and structures. Plus, the aerial images the borough has are outdated. Orthoimagery will help the borough solve both of those problems, as it is a process that allows someone to see all sides of a 3D image, providing an updated view of the entire archipelago and any structures. Aerial imagery is important to the borough primarily for assessment and development purposes. borough manager Michael Powers.
While most people think of imagery as being used for community development, for the various maps that are created there, or for assessing, for tracking a building in development, it actually forms the backbone of our geographic information system and gets considerable use by the public, businesses, and other borough staff.
Seema Garut, the Kodiak Island Borough Assessor, discusses the benefits of ortho imagery to property assessment.
3D imagery will allow us to know if structures are more than one level, allow us to differentiate between types of structures, residential, sheds, that kind of stuff, commercial, also allow us to see fence and distinguish between what is concrete and what is a structure. When you're looking at something from just the top of it, it's hard to know if that's a roof, a flat roof, what are you really looking at? And that 3D imagery would allow us to rotate it so that we could see, oh, look, it's a three-level structure instead of just looking from it from the top and only assessing for one.
In the past, assessors would have to travel to remote areas to inspect structures. The 3D images provided by Ortho Imagery, borough staff believes, will save the borough money since they will no longer need to make those trips. Garut also believes that the interface will help communication with the public about assessing and development.
Having GIS online also allows us to walk through the steps with property owners so that they can see what we are talking about also, alleviating most miscommunication errors because we're both looking at the same image.
Because the data provided by aerial imaging is used by so many people and departments, it is some of the most requested information from the borough and is one of the most accessed pages on the borough website. Borough Manager Michael Powers.
The number one location for website traffic is, of course, our homepage, followed by additional information, followed by the map system. So it is the third most commonly used site on our entire borough website. It surpasses all of the information about agenda items, assembly members, contact information, and all of the departments. Matter of fact, it nearly eclipses all of those combined compared to the map center use. So it is heavily used.
A multi-year contract like this is unique for the borough to consider. Typically, the borough issues year-to-year contracts, but with development of new technology, the borough is now able to contract with a company to take them through the entire traditional six-year assessment cycle. Aaron Welty, Director of Community Development.
The only new thing about this request is the length of the contract, which ultimately saves the borough money because of the inflation rate. We're locking in numbers now at today's costs.
The company using ortho imagery that is seeking a contract with the borough is Eagleview, an aerial imaging company based in New York but operating in Alaska. According to their proposal, they have served more than 2,000 government customers since 2001 and specialize in capturing imagery in challenging climate and terrain conditions. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
The Assembly will vote on Eagleview's aerial imaging contract at this Thursday's regular meeting, which you can hear on KMXT. You can also see sample pictures using ortho imagery on our website, kmxt.org. A news story from the American Homefront Project about National Guard members potentially facing discipline after refusing to deploy to protests.
In California, more than 2,400 National Guard members rushed to major cities as protests erupted following the death of George Floyd. But one member of the California Air National Guard refused the order to go.
You know, if I made the decision to go along with it, I feel like I would sort of be compromising, you know, who I am in that moment.
He says his senior command has warned him about possible disciplinary actions, but he doesn't yet know what they'll be. The guardsman asked to remain anonymous to prevent a worse outcome, and his voice has been altered. Though he anticipated some consequences, he says he wasn't comfortable carrying a weapon around people exercising their First Amendment rights. And as a person of color who sympathizes with the Black Lives Matter movement, he says the guard's presence stifled protests.
What we're told is discourage people from, you know, criminal activity and things like that, but that doesn't necessarily what is going to be communicated on the ground when you see people, you know, in uniform with weapons, you know. standing around formation.
He joined the Guard expecting to do humanitarian work and was surprised by the call to police his own state. And he says he's not alone.
We have people dealing with COVID. We've had people dealing with, you know, natural disasters and things like that. But to actually go out and be sort of this invading force, like, many people are not comfortable with it. They feel like it's not really what they signed up for.
When the protests began, more than 20 states called up their National Guardsmen, and President Trump ordered guardsmen to patrol the streets of Washington. The president also threatened to send active duty service members into cities across the country. Since then, veteran service organizations and GI rights groups say troops have been calling to learn about their options for refusing orders. Bill Galvin is a counselor for the GI Rights Hotline.
We've seen a real uptick in people in the National Guard, mostly, but some in the reserves, who are facing call-up and who are saying, I don't know that this is something I can do. Some of them have said, I'm sympathetic to the protests, and others have said, I don't think I should be at war with people in my own country.
Galvin says troops expressed all kinds of concerns: risk of moral injury, lack of riot control training, and the possibility of acting against the Constitution. Galvin says at the peak of the protests, he took several calls a day. Whatever the reason, refusing to deploy can have consequences.
We do know there's a lot of folks who have chosen not to show. And of course, there's a range of possibilities, everything from a military court-martial and some jail time to more administrative kind of punishments that might even include being kicked out with a bad discharge. It's also quite possible the command could just ignore it. You know, they could say, well, we've got enough people otherwise, so we're just going to forget about this. I mean, you just don't know at this point.
The Veterans Peace Advocacy Group About Face says they know of some 10 service members who've taken concrete steps to avoid deployment. Many more have asked for support. One is an active duty Army soldier stationed in the Midwest. Though his unit was never deployed, he says he wouldn't have gone if they had. The soldier asked for anonymity because he expects reprisal from his command and the public. His voice has been changed. He says some of the riot control tactics used in D.C. reminded him of things he saw in Iraq, and he says they shouldn't be used against Americans.
To me, it's like that violence that we do overseas is coming back home to roost.
National Guard officials at the Pentagon say they're not aware of any widespread disciplinary issues related to the protest response. They added that guardsmen deployed to D.C. executed their mission with compassion and professionalism. This is Carson Frame reporting.
That is from the American Homefront Project with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. All systems are go for state water surveys on stocks of fish and crab. More after this.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at AMSI.org.
Coronavirus concerns forced annual surveys to be canceled for fish and crab stocks in waters managed by the federal government from 300 to 200 miles offshore. But all systems are go for surveys in state waters out to 3 miles. After herring surveys in late winter, COVID protection plans were quickly put in place, says Forrest Bowers, deputy director of the Commercial Fisheries Division at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Components of those plans include things like reducing the number of port calls and, you know, non-essential port calls. But the Department of Fish and Game has not canceled any of our stock assessment surveys that are scheduled for this summer.
Whereas deeper water surveys can include nearly 60 crew and scientists at sea for a few months, state research vessels have around 11 or so. The state surveys include a variety of fish and shellfish stocks from southeast Alaska all the way to Norton Sound.
We have vessel-based work going on in Kodiak in support of the herring fishery there in April. We've already had some sablefish survey work here in southeast Alaska, and then we have our multi-species bottom trawl survey in the Gulf of Alaska. It's primarily a crab survey going on this summer, and there's a handful of other surveys around the state.
Bowers says care and good planning have combined to keep the doors open and all projects in place.
You know, I'd just like to emphasize to folks that we've taken our response to the COVID-19 pandemic very seriously. We have kept all of our area offices open, you know, all of our field projects in place to monitor salmon stocks around the state this summer, as well as projects that support other fisheries. And while it's not business as usual, you know, we are conducting business in as close close to normal fashion as we can.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Currently 51 degrees out at the airport, light rain, fog, and mist, 89% humidity, an east wind of 17 miles an hour blowing with a mile of visibility. About the same here on Signal Hill. Today, rain in the forecast this afternoon, high near 53, east winds 20 miles an hour, 100% chance of rain. Rain tonight could be heavy at times, low around 50, east winds 25 miles an hour, chance of precipitation stays at 100%. With 3/4 of an inch to an inch of rain possible. More rain tomorrow, high near 53, southeast winds 20 to 25. Drops down to 80% chance of rain tomorrow, though. 16th of June, 5:09, the sun came up, goes down at 11:14, 18 hours and 6 minutes of daylight. We're still picking up a little daylight time, about 40 seconds for over yesterday. 80, it was the record high in 2015, 36, the record low in 1966 and 1975. The synopsis of front enters the southwestern Gulf this afternoon and reaches the northern Gulf tomorrow morning, lingering over the Gulf Coast through Thursday morning. West of the Barrens, including Kamishak Bay, gale warning tonight and Wednesday this afternoon. East winds of 30 knots with 6-foot seas up to 12 feet in the afternoon. East winds 35, 14-foot seas rain tonight. Northeast 35, 12-foot seas rain on Wednesday. Barren Islands east. East winds 20, increasing to 30 this afternoon with 8-foot seas. Gale warning tonight. East 40, 12-foot seas rain. Tomorrow, east 30, 11-foot seas. Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through Wednesday. East winds 30, 10-foot seas rain this afternoon. Same tonight. Tomorrow, southeast 25, 13-foot seas. Chiniak Bay, east winds of 20 knots, 6-foot seas and rain this afternoon. Small craft advisory tonight and tomorrow. East 25, 9-foot seas and rain tonight. East 25, 7-foot seas and rain tomorrow. Marmot Bay, east winds 25 with 10-foot seas and a small craft advisory out this afternoon through tomorrow. East 30, 12-foot seas rain tonight. East 25, 9-foot seas rain on Wednesday. Shalikov Strait, gale warning through tonight. Northeast 15 early, increasing to 35 knots. 8-foot seas up to 12 feet this afternoon. Northeast 35, 13-foot seas and rain tonight. East 30, 11-foot seas and rain tomorrow. Shalikov Strait. Tides in the Kodiak District. We had a high tide about a half an hour ago, or 5.4 feet. The afternoon low tides at 5:14, 2.2 feet, and the evening high tides 11:43 tonight, 7.8 feet. The Uganic tide is about now, a high tide of 10.6 feet. The afternoon low tides at 6:09, 3.9 feet, and the evening high tides just after midnight, 12.8 feet. Do have a new weir report to share with you. Looks like Chignik had a great day yesterday, 1,467 new sockeye through the weir for a total of 8,700. Good day in Karluk as well, 13,200, 300 almost went through the weir yesterday with 92,684 total. Iqaluit saw 4,500 new sockeye through the weir, 52,000 total. Not much through Dog Salmon Creek yet. Upper Station saw 15 for a total of 342. Litnick saw 1,084 new sockeye through the weir for a total of 9,000, a little over 9,000. And the Buskin also saw 136 sockeye through the weir yesterday for a total of 775 fish up the weir so far this year. Things are picking up. There's a walk and talk Tuesday with 4-H, explore agriculture and local harvest opportunities on Kodiak for all ages. It's at 1:30 this afternoon. Schedule and tours available from Kodiak 4-H on their Facebook page. All kinds of things available. Check out alaska4h.org/Kodiak. KMXD Board of Directors will be holding their next regular meeting tonight at 6 o'clock via Zoom. If you'd like to sit down in the meeting, please call the station or send us an email at gm@kmxd.org, and we'll send a link to you before the meeting. and I should probably play this fish and game announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued June 12th at 10 a.m. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, June 14th, until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th, in the following areas. In the northwest Kodiak District, the southwest Afognak, northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, the east side Kodiak District, and the Big River and outer Kukak Bay sections of the mainland district. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Sunday, June 14th, until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th, in the following areas. At Kapthea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, Duck Bay, and Nisuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations. In Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And stream number, or Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A couple of more announcements, brief ones. Monday, as of yesterday, the public library reopened by appointment to 8 people at a time for a maximum visit of an hour a day. Appointments are at 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 3 o'clock. Patrons are asked to wear masks and follow social distancing guidelines. To schedule a visit, call the library, 486-8686. There's also reading story time with Miss Ani on Wednesdays at 10:30 on the library's Facebook and YouTube channel. This week she'll be reading bilingual stories. 486-8686 for more information about library programs. Coming up this week, the Borough Assembly has an architectural review board meeting tonight at 5:30 in the Borough Conference Room, and at 6:30 on Thursday, a regular meeting of the Kodiak Island Borough that will be broadcast here on KMXT.